Okay, welcome everybody to the lecture on compact star physics. So today we continue to discuss the structure of neutron stars. And we have been discussing the structures up to the inner core, and I want to elaborate more on the composition of the inner core. So this is the structure continued. Right, so the inner core. So the density. Now I call it the number density. Number density n of the inner core is larger than about twice n0, where n0 is the saturation density. It's 0.15 particles per Fermi cubed. This is the so-called saturation density of nuclear matter. So it's very common if you talk about the inner core of neutron stars, you weight everything in terms of the number density and not the mass density anymore, where n now is the typical density, the saturation density of nuclear matter. So it's about twice the saturation density, so twice the average density I have, for example, for a lead core. So if I look at a lead core, then the density in a lead core is about 0.15 Fermi to minus 3. Question? Okay. Okay, I talked about exotic matter. So we can have hyperons or kaons or quark matter. So we have beta equilibrium for exotic matter. And in this terminology, we mean hyperons and quarks. So we have hyperons and quarks. So this stuff is not really exotic. I mean, we know hyperons, they are around, we know quarks, they are around, we just don't see them. In singular terms, we only see them in the forms of baryons and mesons. So in beta equilibrium, we have such high densities that those strange particles do not decay. So for example, we have, so usually we have this beta equilibrium for protons and neutrons. We have written down this several times. We have then a detailed balance, so protons plus electrons can be transformed to a neutron, and a neutron vice versa could decay to a proton plus an electron. And in beta equilibrium, the number of reactions to one side and the other side are equal. So the total amount basically I have on neutrons and protons and electrons does not change. So this is beta equilibrium. And the neutrinos are going out. And usually they are not taken into account if I just look at the equation of state, for example. But this will be important for cooling. So by this process, I can produce neutrinos, and the neutrinos go out. But this only happens if I have a non-zero temperature. So if I have a non-zero temperature, I have some gain in energy from beta equilibrium, and this is taken away by the neutrino, thereby cooling the neutron star very efficiently. So I can do the same now for hyperons. So how does it go with hyperons? So instead of a neutron, I put in a lambda hyperon and a neutrino, which then goes out. And if you look at the quark structure, you have for neutrons, you have a U quark, a D quark, and a D quark. And for a lambda, you have a U quark, a D quark, and a strange quark. So simply replace in quark terminology the d quark with a strange quark. Strangeness is not conserved. Strangeness is not conserved, which means I can have an unequal number on the left-hand side of my equation and the right-hand side of the equation. Here I have no strangeness, here I have a net strangeness coming from the amount of strange quarks. So this is possible in BTA equilibrium in a neutron star. So if I have a detailed balance here, and now suddenly the Fermi momenta of protons plus electrons is getting higher than the Fermi momenta or the other mass of the lambda, then it's getting energetically favored to transform protons plus electrons to lambda particles that have lower mass. And that's how one can produce hyperons in neutron stars. The other way around, if a lambda wants to decay to a proton and an electron, this is Pauli blocked. So the levels are blocked, so it cannot decay to protons plus electrons if the density is high enough. Lambdas can be Pauli blocked. So they turn out to be stable. Turn stable, basically. You might know the lifetime of a lambda hyperon. How big is the lifetime of the lambda hyperon? Does anybody know? No? It's 10 to minus 10 seconds. Pretty fast. So this would ordinarily, this would decay immediately. But in a neutron star, it lives on for 10 to 9 years, the lifetime of a neutron star, the age of the universe. It could have happily live in the core of a neutron star. So let's look at a critical condition for making hyperons. So the onset of hyperons are just argued that the energy needed to have a lambda initially in the neutron star is basically at zero lambda density. This would be just the mass of the lambda. And in the medium, which I leave out now for, we have some effective mass of the lambda, which is modified by the medium. But so far, let us work with the vacuum lambda to get some numbers and see where it leads us. So we look for a free gas. So free gas, we just take the vacuum mass of the lambda. And then we argue that the chemical potential of the lambda is equal to what? So we can say it's equal in chemical equilibrium the one of the proton plus the one of the electron, as we did before for ordinary beta equilibrium for protons and neutrons. So this is mu proton plus mu electron, and this is equal mu neutron. So mu lambda is equal to mu neutron chemical potential, right? So we can see this also from here. We could have inferred that automatically from our generic formula for the chemical potential. You might recall that we said if we have a chemical potential of a particle I, then it's just given by the barrier number of the particle times the barrier chemical potential plus the charge of the chemical of that particle times the charge chemical potential. So we could have inferred immediately that the lambda has the same barrier number as the neutron and the same charge as the neutron, so the two chemical potentials have to be the same. Good. So now we can plug this in. What is mu neutron? Mu neutron is given for free gas, kF of the neutron squared plus the mass of the neutron squared. So this has to be equal now to the mass of the lambda, quotation mark. This is for the free case. So now one can compute what is the Fermi momenta of the neutrons, and then one finds, I mean, the number density is proportional to kF neutron cubed, right? And from this, the critical one. So this would be the critical Fermi momenta, the critical density. And this turns out to be 8 times saturation density for free gas. So it's not outrageously large, but it's quite large, 8 times saturation density. So only if you go really to the maximum mass configuration, we might hope for getting this. Anyway, this is for the case without interactions. With interactions, it can happen much earlier. So for sigma hyperons, we have all the other hyperons which have a negative charge. Now let's look at sigma hyperons. For sigma hyperons, we have now the following basically we have the sigma minus goes over to a neutron plus an electron. And plus here we have a neutrino, right, which goes out. So that basically means that the chemical potential of a sigma minus is the one of the neutron plus the one of the electron, right? So we boost up the right-hand side of that equation now with the electron chemical potential. So it's getting easier for the sigma minus to being produced because of this additional energy coming from the electron. So the negative charge helps. Basically, the reason is that these are now highly relativistic electrons populating very high levels at high densities. So they have very high energies. So it's very easy for them to being transferred to other particles which have negative charge. So those particles can actually be appearing before the lambda, despite the fact that the sigma minus is a little bit heavier than the lambda. So if you look at the masses, then this has something like 80 MeV more mass than the lambda. But the electron chemical potential can reach values in excess of 100 MeV. So this can compensate for the mass differences and can even lower the critical onset. So it happens then for a free gas that, so I have the condition that basically the mass of the sigma minus is equal now the Fermi momentum of the neutron squared plus the mass of the neutron squared, the same we had before, but now plus the Fermi momentum of the electrons we have to add on. And if one does now, now we need also to get somehow this one from a free gas. And you can just compute the equation of state for a free gas, and then you see that the critical density for the sigma minus is about 4 times the saturation density. Yeah. So, and this is already in the region where we can say, okay, it can really appear in the core of a neutron star. So negatively charged particles are favored. Just said that the electron chemical potential can be at the order of 100 MeV or more. That's why negatively charged particles are favored. So that about hyperons. There are a lot of models in the literature who are discussing nucleons and hyperons in neutron stars. And in many of those models, I mean, none of this really solves the fundamental theory of QCD. They are all effectively modeled to describe nuclei and so-called hypernuclei. These are nuclei which have an additional hyperon in there. If you take those models and calculate neutron star matter, you find that the onset of hyperons can happen between 2 to 3 times saturation density. effective models. So now with interactions and critical for the lambda actually can be the order of 2 to 3 times saturation density. The problem is now once you populate those hyperons, you start with zero momentum, right? You fill up momentum. So right, so we have the neutrons. And then here we have the lambdas. And this is just given here by the mass difference, the mass of the lambda minus the mass of the neutron. So these highly energetic neutrons are transformed to lambdas. Yeah. What is happening then if that you lower the overall momentum, the energy of the particles? So here we have the Fermi energy for neutrons. Here we have then the Fermi energy of the lambdas. Yeah. And this would be basically the before the transition, before. And then this one we have equal Fermi energies after. Fermi energy neutrons after. Or say initially and final. Or this is without hyperons and this would be with hyperons. So this means that lambdas lower the Fermi energy of the neutrons. So the Fermi momenta of the neutrons goes down. The density does not go down because we have lambdas in the system. But what goes down is the pressure of the neutrons. The pressure of neutrons, which basically is proportional to the Fermi momentum to the fifth power, also goes down. And it goes down by the fifth power. Right. This goes down like squared, but this goes down like the fifth power. So the pressure goes down. So this means the mass goes down. We're losing stability. Yeah, this means we're losing stability. So the maximum mass goes down. And eventually, the maximum mass goes below 2 solar masses. And then we're having a problem. So with hyperons, with lambdas, say lambdas. And that's a problem. And that problem is called the hyperon puzzle. It's called a hyperon puzzle because all nuclear models predict that this will eventually happen. Eventually, the Fermi energy, because of the higher density, is reaching the mass of the lambda in dense matter. So this has to happen somewhere. But then we lower so much the pressure that we can get below 2 solar masses. So there are two ways out. One is, of course, we forget about hyperons. We just close our eyes and say hyperons do not exist, or something, a miracle is happening, and something forbids that hyperons are present in neutron stars. Or we say, OK, we tune and tweak our parameters so that we get 2 solar masses. And this works. I mean, you can tweak models, and it works. And the third conclusion is, which is more fancy, but really exciting, is that maybe a new phase appears which stabilizes the whole stuff. So solutions to the hyperon puzzle. One, close eyes. Ignore hyperons. Ignore lambdas. Now this is the poor man's way to do it. Tweak parameters I would say this is not scientific, right? Let's put this in. This is really not scientific. In principle, this is scientific, tweaking parameters, but of course. I mean, in some cases, you might have models where you can tweak the parameters and still you don't get two solar masses. That might happen.
Which parameters could you tweak? So what is an example for a parameter?
Yeah, so the question is, what kind of parameters can I tweak? So if I look at this balance equations where the hyperon set in, so you can, for example, change the parameters in such a way that the onset of hyperons is shifted to very high densities. One would be, to very high densities, so that basically it doesn't appear, or if it appears, only in the very core. That's one solution. The other solution is that you add some repulsive interactions between the hyperons. Yeah, so you populate the lambdas, but then when they see each other, they repel each other so much that they generate additional pressure, which compensates the loss of pressure I have here. That's the basic picture. So both scenarios have been discussed in the literature, and it works in certain models. So the third one is add a new stabilizing phase. You can say, okay, this is the miracle. This is a wizard with a magic wand who's now saying, okay, and there may be now quark matter. And then we stabilize the whole thing. Let's call it a new stabilizing phase. In the common scientific jargon, it's called quark matter, but it's just a new phase which eventually at high densities you might describe in terms of quarks being quasi-particles. But it might be really something more fuzzy than that. Maybe the whole picture of having quarks breaks down, and this is something which is a mixture of two quark states and three quark states, which are somehow interacting with each other in a way we don't know yet. Quark matter. I mean, if you look at the densities we're having here, twice saturation density or higher, it's really at the scale of lambda QCD. So if you take what we have in lambda QCD and say the energy density is at the order of lambda QCD, so scale is lambda QCD, which is usually taken to be around 200 MeV, so a rough estimate a particle physicist can do is say, okay, well, the energy density we have at hand should go like lambda QCD to the fourth power, see? And this actually is at the order of about twice saturation density, twice times epsilon naught, where epsilon naught is now the saturation energy density. So it's not completely outrageous to argue, okay, now QCD takes over, really. Nuclear physics is out. Nuclear forces, which are some van der Waals interaction between quarks, which we see as a nuclear-nuclear interaction, is not the correct description anymore. We're coming to the place where really the quarks are interacting directly with each other. And that's called quark matter. Might be really complicated stuff. This is strongly interacting matter, with all these gluons interacting between the quarks, so it could be, has not been solved yet, so we have not been able to solve QCD in this regime at low temperatures and high densities. It's not, cannot be solved. For high temperatures and low densities, we can have supercomputers. We can solve QCD, but not here. There's a so-called sign problem, which forbids to calculate something at high densities. OK, any questions to this? For the hyperons?
So hyperons do not react with strongly. So they interact weakly, right? Then can they also interact with muons, muon neutrinos?
So the question was about how do a hyperons interact. They decay weakly, so they are, of course, like neutrons and protons. They are, of course, they couple to weak interactions. That's how they decay in 10 to minus 10 seconds. But they also interact strongly.
But
so
can they interact with the muon neutrinos? Is that an
sure.
additional?
Yeah, it's weak interaction, so they can also couple to muons by weak interactions.
Yeah.
But the important interaction here for neutron star equation of state is the strong interaction. Any other question? Good, so I need some space. So let's get to quark matter. Yeah.
The sign problem is that you can't do numerical calculations by Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
Because the determinant is imaginary.
Yes.
What is it
exactly? So the question was about the sign problem in lattice QCD. What's the problem? So as you said, there's this determinant which describes the quarks. And if you add a chemical potential, it's imaginary. So basically, if you look at plane waves and you suddenly have an imaginary energy, then it blows up exponentially. In that case, actually, it's the other way around. You have an oscillating behavior. So you can't really, even if you make a statistical analysis, this would average to zero because it's oscillating. That's the right way to say it. It's not exploding up. It's oscillating because of that. Imaginary determinant. So quarks. So we have up, down, and strange quarks. Up, down, and strange quarks. So those are, if you look at the current quark mass, they have masses for the U and the D quark, which are the order of a few MeV. So very light. The strange quark has a mass of about 100 MeV. Now, I just quoted the electron chemical potential. The electron chemical potential was something like 100 MeV. And the chemical potentials we are talking about in neutron star are about the mass of the nucleon, about a few hundred MeV GeV. Yeah? The next heavy quark would be the charm quark. Just who knows the charm quark mass? No. The charm quark mass is about 1.3 GeV. So this is larger than the mass of the nucleon and the usual chemical potentials we have inside neutron stars. So they do not appear. So the mass of the nucleon. Do not appear. And actually, this carries a baryon number of 1/3. So I have to compare this with 1/3 of this one. So this is the typical quark chemical potential, right? So I have the baryochemical potential mu baryon is, of course, equal 3 times the mu quark chemical potential due to baryon number, yeah? So the baryon number of a quark, B is not a baryon number, is 1/3. This is the baryon number. Yeah, so I have, so the corresponding scale for populating quarks is 1/3 of the nuclear mass, 300 MeV. So any quarks which are much heavier than 300 MeV, 1/3 of the mass of the nucleon, or say 500, we can go up to 500 MeV for quark stars, are not populated. So the charm quark is not populated. Yeah, and also the bottom and the top quark, they're even heavier, they're not populated. So we only need to consider up, down, and strange quarks. We have beta equilibrium, so the number of strange quarks will be the number of down quarks modulo the mass of the strange quark. Yeah, so we have so the U quark, so the charge of the U quark is plus 2/3, and the charge of the D quark is the charge of the strange quark is equal to minus 1/3 charge. Yeah, so we have now the baryon number and we have the charge, so we can compute the chemical potentials and we can look also for reactions between the U and the D quark. So for example, we can have a U quark. And if we add an electron to the U quark, we have a D quark, right? It has the charge minus 1/3, 2/3 minus 1 minus, yeah, this works, and then plus a neutrino. So in quark matter, those reactions are now happening. So just replace the protons and the neutrons with the U and the D quark, and you have the very same relation for quark matter. Yeah, and then this one goes out. So basically means that the chemical potential of the U quark plus the one of the electron is equal to the one of the D quark in chemical equilibrium. Yeah? Now you also see that the quantum numbers of the down quark and the strange quarks are the same. They're always minus 1/3 for the charge and plus 1/3 for the baryon number. So it also means that the chemical potential of those two quarks are the same. Not the masses, but the chemical potential. Right. So let's assume the following. Assume that the quark chemical potential mu quark shall be much larger than the mass of the strange quark, which is around 100 MeV. And typically, we have a few hundred MeV for the chemical potential of the mu quark. Then we can compute, we can assume that basically the quarks are massless. So this means massless quarks. Massless quarks. So the chemical potential of the U quark is the Fermi momentum of the U quark squared plus the mass of the U quark, and that is, to a very good approximation, just the Fermi momentum of the U quarks. Mm-hmm. And the same for the D quark. And that is equal to mu S, so this is the Fermi momentum of the S quark. Right? So here, from this relation, immediately follows that the number density of D quarks is the same as the number density of the strange quarks, which in both cases go like just the Fermi momentum cubed of the corresponding particle species, right? So now we want to have charge neutrality. Charge neutrality. So this means we're looking at the charges, the number of electrons, they have a minus sign, plus 2/3 times the number density of u quarks, minus 1/3 the number density of d quarks, minus 1/3 the number density of strange quarks is equal to 0. Yeah. Okay, now I can put in this one here. So minus the number density of electrons plus 2/3 the number density of u quarks, minus 2/3 times the number density of d quarks or strange quarks, d plus s. Which is the same. Let's call it d quarks is equal to 0. So the solution is somehow clear. The number of u quarks is the number of d quarks, and then it works. It works because it means basically that also the Fermi momentum of the u quarks is equal to the Fermi momentum of the d quarks, right? Because the number densities are the same. And from this relation, we can infer immediately that also the other one is 0. Because from this relation here, for massless quarks, from u plus electron is equal to d, we get that the Fermi momentum of the u quarks plus the one of electrons is equal to the ones of d quarks. Yeah? So if these two Fermi momenta are the same, then this is 0. No electrons. No electrons in quark matter and strange quark matter. If I can ignore the strange quark mass, right? So I have to look at chemical potentials, which are a few hundred MeV high. And of course, I should start at the mass of the nucleon divided by 3. So the minimum chemical potential I can have is something like 300 MeV, and then it goes higher. So this is not a really bad approximation. Now, there are corrections which are actually small. So you can implement actually the strange quark. And that's a nice exercise. You can compute for m strange not equal 0 that the electron chemical potential is something like the mass of the strange quark squared 4/ mu of the u quark or the quark itself. Yeah, which is small. So if I put in here 100 MeV, and I think the 4 is even downstairs. A 100 MeV squared over typically 300 MeV, this is 1/3. 100 divided by 4 is 25 divided by 3, so this is around 10 MeV. So an order of magnitude smaller compared to a neutron star matter. And you see it gives also a very small correction to those Fermi momenta because those Fermi momenta are 300 MeV, like the chemical potential. So this is a factor 1/30 smaller, so I can really safely ignore electrons even if I include the strange quark mass. So any questions? Nope. Good. So this is then called strange quark matter. And the corresponding stars are called strange stars. So in the last few minutes, I will tell you a little bit more about those strange stars. strange stars. That's a special class of compact stars. And it goes with the so-called Bodner-Witten hypothesis. Bodner-Witten hypothesis, which simply makes the statement, strange quark matter is more stable than ordinary matter. And the most stable one would be iron 56, more stable than iron 56. What does it mean in terms of chemical potentials for our neutron star, compact star, strange star? Basically means that the energy, the chemical potential of iron 56 would be larger than the chemical potential of strange quark matter. And strange quark matter I denote as SQM, mu strange quark matter. So this is the Bodner-Witten hypothesis. Yeah. Now you can argue, okay, but come on, this cannot be true. So if there's some form of matter which is more stable than iron 56, then all the iron in the world would immediately collapse to this strange quark matter droplet. However, there's a way to say that if you want to collapse iron to strange quark matter, you have to convert 56 down quarks to 56 strange quarks instantly. And this doesn't work. So you need a weak interaction rate to the power of 56. So it will be suppressed by this weak interaction, by the weak decay to the power of 56. So this can be blocked. So decay iron 56 to strange quark matter blocked by strangeness conservation. In vacuum, right? So in vacuum, we have strangeness conservation. In a neutron star, this would be different. So in a neutron star, we could go from iron 56 to strange quark matter because we can have this Pauli, we don't have strangeness conservation, so we can produce strange quark matter in the core of a neutron star. No problem. But for our daily life, we need to invoke this one. But then we also have to say, okay, but if this is the case, then in principle, iron 56 could decay to up-down quark matter. To mu for up-down quark matter. And now there is no restriction from strangeness, so this can happen instantly. So in order to prevent that, we have to argue that in this case, the chemical potential of mu and d quarks, of mu up-down quark matter, must be higher than the one for strange quark matter. And this works, so you can construct models, and you can see, indeed, it is the case that this matter is less stable than that one. And the argument is the same as I had for neutrons and hyperons before for neutron stars. So you have this kind of matter at a given density for up and down quarks. And then you convert it to something which has three different states, up, down, and strange quarks. And you simply fill the high momentum tails now to produce strange quarks and fill it up. And thereby, you lower the overall Fermi energy. And lowering the Fermi energy is lowering the chemical potential. So basically, what you argue is that that the Fermi momenta of iron 56 is somewhere here. So you have to construct models which produce you this Fermi energy here. It's above here. And for up-down strange quark matter, it's down here. And then this is called the Bodmer-Witten hypothesis. Of course, it could also be that the model somehow produces a Fermi energy which is above iron 56, so no absolutely stable strange quark matter. And then we don't discuss strange stars, we discuss so-called hybrid stars. Yeah. But both of these scenarios we will discuss now in the next lecture then on Tuesday. Any questions to the Bodmer-Witten hypothesis? Have you seen this before or heard before? No. You haven't heard about that we're living in a safe place. We cannot collapse to strange quark matter. Isn't this a heavy thought to take home? Okay, just kidding. Okay, see you then next week.